which I'm grateful when I forget and he does. Okay, you have reached the Aries Working Group call in the afternoon. Today is the 20th of November. We have some cool topics today. We're going to play the issue game, and also we're going to talk about the Stable RFC by Stephen Curran, some Anoncred's 2.0 work from the URSA team, and this should be a good discussion. Please mind the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. Be nice to each other and don't do illegal stuff that inhibits the ability for all of us to use this in a nice and happy way. Are there anyone new here today that would like to introduce themselves? Anybody? Okay, we have silence. We're glad you're all back. We have announcements. The Aries Workshop and Connectathon, December 3rd through 5th in Provo, Utah. Grateful to sponsor StreetCred and Hyperledger. We have revised our food sponsor estimates based on people who have signed up. It's now cheaper. And so if you were trying to decide on whether you should or you are able to sponsor some lunch or something for the Connectathon to help the conference go a little bit smoother, it's now cheaper to do so, and hopefully that puts you over the line. We are very excited, anyone to come. If you have not signed up yet, please do, so that we have an accurate headcount for setup and logistics. The Sovereign Foundation is hosting that. There is no attendance fee for that. We have Hyperledger has stepped up to sponsor the venue, and we have Street Cred as our first one in the door to sponsor some food. We would love some more sponsors there. It goes smoother when we don't have to leave to go find food. So that would be very grateful for that. Today, right? No, it's tomorrow. At 1 p.m. Mountain Standard, Drummond Reed will be talking on the SSI Meetup webcast. Can I call it a webcast? I just cringe at the word webinar. Talking all about pure DIDs. Wait, that's not Drummond Reed. I said Drummond Reed, didn't I? That's Daniel Hardman. We'll be talking about pure DIDs at the SSI Meetup, and that will be really, really good. We're talking about something else with Daniel, and some of that came up, and some of the topic stuff's going to be really, really great. So if you haven't, or even if you have tuned into the pure DID stuff recently, you will definitely want to be there or be able to catch the recording later. Also, Stephen Curran and crew, do you want to talk about the edX course?
Sure. We did a chapter about a year and a half ago in the basic edX Hyperledger blockchain course, the existing one. We now have added a full course focused entirely on Indy, Aries, and URSA, and that just went live this week, and we're pretty excited about that because it took some time to do. So check it out.
Fantastic. More education is good. Okay, so related meetings review. The one that we want to highlight here is the identity working group call, because that's a really good one to highlight the stuff that happens in all the other meetings. And so I want to spend less time in doing related meetings review here, so that we can have better time for work updates and other stuff. Notes are still acceptable here if you would like to, but I would like to not spend meeting time unless something is very urgent. The one that I will highlight is the morning call this morning, which happened because that's a very, very close cousin to this call. Richard, do you want to summarize this morning's call?
Yes, we had a great conversation. Robert Mitwicki presented a proposal for a crypto service. The key finding from that proposal I thought was interesting is there are a lot of use cases where you'd want to access your agent's crypto without it actually being part of the agent protocol. And so how do we make that available? And I thought that was a really useful scenario. And Mike specifically had a lot of feedback on the pros and cons of the approach Robert put together. So excellent conversation. I have got the video posted. People are welcome to, I encourage people to look at it and give feedback on the RFC. There are some next steps for the team that presented that. And yeah, that's the update.
Thank you, Richard. And call recording if you did, were not there. Very good. Upcoming releases and work updates. Protocol test suite.
I guess I will say something about that. So I think I mentioned last week that I had finished up all the infrastructure changes that I think we really needed, and we've moved on to getting more tests going. And as part of that, we've also added the ability for the test suite to handle routing keys and connections that it's evaluating through its tests. So that's good news. And aside from that, we could really use more contributors of tests in the test suite. That would be very helpful.
Yes. And
especially before the Connectathon.
Especially you said what I was going to say, but with lots of emphasis. Heading up to the Connectathon, that will be very, very helpful. Daryl O'Donnell asked real quick where he can find detail on food sponsoring. My screen sharing, otherwise I would have copied and pasted a link. If you click this link in the notes, Daryl, it will take you to a wiki page, and there is a should be an option there that helps you understand who to reach out to. Okay.
I'm not sure it's there. I tried there, and I couldn't find it.
Okay. Well, as soon as I'm not on the screen anymore, I will go find it for you and paste it in the notes. Okay. Aries KMS. Is Cam on? I don't see a Cam. He reported this morning, work is ongoing and making some progress with some RFCs and everything else. So that's good. And Cam's doing some good work there. Verifiable data registry interface library. Is that Ken?
It's third place behind Aries advanced rich schemas work in both node layer and in the other RFCs that we're doing at the Aries layer. So it's not making good progress right now. It'll pick up pace in probably a couple of weeks.
Perfect. Okay, Aries Cloud Agent Python. The last release was 0.3.5. Any new updates in the last week, BCGov team?
A little bit. 3.5, as I said, nothing. That was a while ago. We are, as I've been mentioned, lamented that we've been struggling with getting scaling going on and getting up, getting decent transaction rates. Glad to say that we finally are getting scaling the way we would expect. So that's good progress. A single agent is not that fast, but we can now scale up to 15 or 20 agents running in parallel and processing and getting up to decent rates. So not we've spent a lot of time doing, you know, finding out the joys of debugging message passing through multiple layers and multiple scaled processes, but horizontal scaling is not working, so we're making progress.
Awesome. Thanks for your work there. Aries Framework Go.
We gave this update this morning. You can look at our weekly planning notes as usual. We're always happy to have more people join us on our calls. We mentioned last week the first preview release. You can check the links to see the description and, you know, play around with it with the tests and the Swagger interface that looks a bit like Akapai. Right now, we've started work on mediator routing, WebSocket transport, WebAssembly, credential issuance, and we merged our first browser primitive support for IndexedDB, which is an in-browser database.
Cool. Also happy to see WASM there. So good work there and grateful. Do we have a Jack today? He wasn't on this morning's call. I don't see, but he has been making progress on the Ruby SDK and more details there if you need. Any update? Do we have anyone talking about framework.net? I know there's been some minor updates. Okay, static agent Python.
Some minor updates. If you're interested, you can go look. Mostly those were associated with things that we're using from within the test suite. So for instance, the support for routing to connections made it into the static agent before it made it into the test suite. So that's in there.
Awesome. The other thing that I'll highlight is the Aries toolbox. I don't have links yet, but I will add them quickly when I'm not on screen anymore. We, after apologizing for months about not transferring the toolbox code base into Hyperledger, that was done today. And so there's two repos we moved. One is the toolbox itself, and another one is a totally separate repo, which has a plugin for Akapai that has support for some additional administrative protocols for use with the toolbox. And we have a Docker container or two that you can use to sort of get up and running quickly if you would like to test that. So that's there. I plan on a demo soonish. We'll have to see when there's time in the schedule for something like that, but good progress there. And then JavaScript, I think, did we make the right progress on renaming repos and adding maintainers? For Aries SDK JavaScript?
It's the wrong time zone for AJ, but I think I saw that happen on Rocket Chat.
Okay. So that's moving along. And I think we finally got Rai engaged there we figured out how to reach out to Rai, I should say, to get those changes made. And I skipped SDK Java. Any news there?
No, it's been renamed. We call it now Aries Framework Java. And we have a Slack channel on that. We released our first PR, not much progress last week. This week we plan to take up a few more items.
Is it called Aries Framework Java?
That's right. There's also a Slack channel with the same name.
Right. Perfect. Okay. Any updates from Brent and Ken on the rich schemas and VCs?
The schema feedback on the schema object on the RFC for Aries is going on right now, and we've put in a PR, which is a work in progress, that is now publicly visible for the node implementation of the schema. And we're continuing to work on additional RFCs and hypes, and more code will be coming.
Awesome. Thank you for the update. I'm going to let Mike talk about Ursa when we get down to the Ursa section. Any other work updates before we move on to the agenda? Okay. Let's play a few minutes playing the issue game. I would like to report success before we even started, because I had four picked out and one of them was closed by someone who didn't realize it was open. So grateful there. Let's talk about a couple of issues and discuss either what needs to be done to move it forward or whether we can close it or not. First up on the list, I have 94. This was a question asked by Oscar Van Dieter, who unfortunately is not on the call today. And he was asking about routing and the various aspects of it and how it applies to transports. We had some comments by Stephen in a reply and some more by Stephen. And then it's been hanging out there since the 24th of July. There's a bunch of discussion here. Oscar mentioned that he would write a PR to include some or write an RFC, I'm assuming what he meant, to talk about these things. Does anyone have any updates on this? Any further discussion or knowledge of what's going on?
I think he did mean a PR. He just wanted to add it to the DIDCOM or to the RFC that he was looking at, 94. He wanted to add more to it, but I'm not sure. I mean, I don't think the community is likely to change on this. So I think the question's been asked, the answer was given. It did get a thumb up print. That's Jordan. So I think it's okay to close. But obviously I didn't open it.
Okay, I might reach out to Oscar or tag him in it just to see if he wants a chance to respond, and then otherwise close that. Okay.
Maybe the better way is to close it with a Oscar. If you're not comfortable with this, please reopen.
Please reopen. Oh, I like that. That's even better. Okay, I will do that. Next up on the block is 114. This is was opened by Daniel Bloom, talking about the use of predefined identities in the test suite. I made a comment. Daniel made a comment, and then nothing has happened. Any further discussion that's happened on this topic? Unfortunately, Daniel Hardman's not with us. Daniel, do you know any additional info?
So some of this thinking was captured in Daniel Hardman's RFC on the test suite. So I'd say this is probably, I think those ideas are captured well enough in that RFC that I don't think we really need this issue any longer.
Perfect. Since you opened it, I'll count that as closing. What I've been doing when I close them is I close them with a comment referring to this meeting, so that if someone wants to come and hear about it, then they can come and hear that. So I'll do that in a second. The next one is about RFC 37, and we're talking a little bit about a clarity of intent of a verifier. There's a handful of things brought in from OIDC to VC bridging. There was some participation from a variety of community members on this topic. We had Daniel propose that we should merge 158 and then merge 158. And then nothing's happened since August 30th. Does anyone in the community have any info on this?
I suspect it's probably good to go, but I'm not certain.
So I think I'll execute this one the same way that I did the first one, meaning I will close it saying, and if you, this should not have been closed, please reopen. But it looks like the end result actually happened. So in that case, I'll go ahead and close that with a note, and it can be reopened if it isn't. Look at that. That was like 5 minutes. Okay. Are there any other pressing issues? I went looking for tags, and there were no issues tagged with, indicating that they should be brought up in the issue game or talked about in our meeting. Is there anything else that anyone is dying to bring up real quick? Okay. Well, that's good progress. Steven, are you ready to take over, talk about the Aries Stable RFC?
I am indeed.
All right.
So there we go. I'm going to share a presentation because I like to do it that way. So I'm going to ask a favor of the community. The last time the conversation got a little ahead of what I was presenting and a few topics came up that was confusing. So I'm going to ask that I'm just going to go through the presentation first. It's not very long. And then I've got a list of potential topics that we could talk through, but prefer to raise the conversation then so we don't jump too far ahead. Is that okay? Silence. Okay, good.
Yes.
Good. Okay, so this is about RFC 302, which if I click, I won't do anything with because I shared my browser and not that, so you probably can't see that, but 302 is talking about Aries Stable, and so this sort of goes over briefly the concepts behind how Aries Stable, we think Aries Stable could work, and what we're proposing from a very mechanical perspective, so you can see exactly what we're talking about. The goal is to communicate, so it's two things, to communicate and to evolve. So communicate amongst builders of agents, the version of every protocol to use, the exact version of every protocol to use when trying to accomplish interoperability across a set of independent deployments. So builders are the people who either build frameworks or who build applications on top of those frameworks, people who are deploying Aries agents in the wild. I got a couple of chat things. Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I got distracted in case that was a question, but I asked not for not. Where did I go? There we are. Sorry about that. Okay. So communicate exactly what protocols and what versions of those protocols to use if you want to build a system that's going to interoperate with somebody else. And do it in a way that both deployments, both builders can work independently at building stuff and still have a decent chance of connecting at the end. And then secondly, after that, evolve the versions in a way so that people will understand, you know, using SemVar, what it means to support one version of Aries Stable versus a different version of Aries Stable, and who you're likely to be able to communicate with if you update yours with in a particular way. So that's the idea, is to come up with a single, you know, with well-defined set of protocols that are likely to be able to communicate. And this came out because, you know, we have built Akamai and people are trying it and getting small inconsistencies, and people want us to upgrade to one thing, and then we've got to go coordinate with, you know, people we already have interoperable demos and live use, and we're struggling with how to do that in a formal, consistent way. I call out a couple of non-goals here. This has nothing to do with discussing, evolving, adding RFCs. What this says is, you know, every once in a while, this evolve, for instance, is to say, hey, a bunch of new RFCs have been raised. Should we support those as part of an Aries Stable definition? Nothing to do with how those RFCs came to be. So we're not talking about that. That is an entire another discussion. We're also not talking about shared components, things like what's moving into the area, you know, Aries core or anything like that. So those are non-goals of Aries Stable.
Stephen, I have a question. Should I wait till later, or is now good?
I prefer you wait it till later, but yeah, you're Sam. Go ahead.
Ouch. So the question I have here is, what if in the process of trying to adopt things, you discover that there's ambiguity in the RFCs? Is that within the scope of the stable conversations?
I'll hold that till the end.
Okay.
Let's keep going. Yeah. So communicate. I said one of the goals was communicate. So an Aries Stable version. So what we propose to do for that is we would define an Aries Stable version, e.g. 1.0.0. And as part of the definition of, in addition to just that number, we would also enumerate all of the RFCs that are part of Aries Stable and a link to each version, basically the GitHub commit for the RFC that we're going to support in 1.0.0. So we're literally pointing to each specific commit, not just pointing to the README and having it float, but actually pointing to a specific commit of the RFC. And that's what we would use as the gospel truth of what each builder would build to. And so we could include deprecated versions, and we actually have an example of that coming up in Aries, in what I've proposed as the 1.0.0 Aries Stable. We could have multiple versions of an RFC even supported, the 1.0 version of, you know, issue credential, and an upcoming 1.1 could both be supported. All of those sort of possibilities are there. And we could move, if it's a non, you know, if it's a clarification that does not change any implementations, we could, in theory, move a link within it, or we simply use the SemVar of, oh, we want to, you know, add new RFCs or change the RFCs that are in a version, so we have to upgrade the version to 1.01. Ideally, in addition to the two things we've got here, we would also enumerate the test cases that demonstrate adherence to the versions of the RFCs. So So not only do we have a version, a set of links to RFCs that are supported in that version, but we also have a set of test cases that should execute correctly for an implementation to truly claim adherence to that. And note as well that I think it's perfectly reasonable that there would be multiple current Aries stable major versions, just like Python, you know, 2.x and 3.x. We can have 1.x.x, which is the indie SDK-based stream that we have today, and then 2.x would be an Aries SDK-based stream or something like that that would use other RFCs that are coming. So that's perfectly reasonable, and any given implementation could say that they support both of those. An implementation is not restricted to supporting only one version of Aries Stable. They could support multiple versions. It all depends. That's part of the communication, how the builder communicates out to the community saying, hey, if you interact with us, it'll work if you're running Aries Stable 1.2.1. Communication of builder adherence is in the RFC, but in a separate section. And basically what happens is there's a table in there and self-attested adherence to an Aries Stable version. You basically put entries in that says, you know, what your open or closed source product is, framework, product, deployment, and what version or versions of Aries Stable do you support? And ideally, in the future, a link to the test results that show that adherence. So again, separation of frameworks like Aries Cloud Agent.net could support one thing, and then various deployments like the closed source StreetCred ID iOS app that is actually deployed in the App Store or installed from the App Store would be two separate things because they're not going to lockstep synchronize. And then the last is the way that the process evolves. So there's a versioning process involved. Basically, somebody in the community proposes a new Aries Stable version. They add a new number. They set a new number. They update the list of RFCs and versions that they want supported in that new number. Again, future, they update the list of applicable test cases, and then they take the old version that is, you know, the current version that was before they put this PR in and add that to a list of previous versions with a link to the document for this RFC, to the latest commit when that version was active. That would require, and instead of just merging that PR, we would want, just like in when we change the status of an RFC from, say, proposed to accepted, and we get consensus of the community, we would want the builder community, those who are building things, to actually have agreement on that before this PR would be merged in. So that's the communication and the evolution mechanisms that are outlined in the RFC. In the RFC, we've proposed Aries Stable 1.0.0, which is basically the set of RFCs that have been supported in the existing clients, in the existing agents that have been deployed in the wild. So what's in essentially Aries Cloud Agent Python and Aries Framework.net. Obviously, we need to declare a version. We need feedback from the community. So this is still a proposed and not an accepted RFC. We noted, as was noted in the conversation, a bunch of the protocols were not in accepted status, which is kind of interesting. A few of them, I think, can be marked as accepted. Other ones are trickier. ACK is not even included, and so we're starting to evolve ACK to make it apply. 67 looks like it probably should be removed because it's not applicable, or it's not used in 1.0. So there's some back and forth to nail down exactly what we want and agreements. Now, the agreement we want is in the builder community. It doesn't have to be the whole community, everyone weighing in on their opinions and things like that. What has to happen is the people that want to support 1.0 are the people that need to agree. If we want to have another, and that either have one or intend to have a product that they want to interoperate with the existing agents that are out there. We're happy from our perspective to move forward on a few things, on a bunch of things, but we want to lock it down pretty quickly so we can declare, okay, here's a 1.0 that we can declare for now, and then we can begin working on a new version and define what needs to get upgraded later. So there are a set of RFCs that are in there with the versions connected. And one of the things I added, for example, was an archived RFC. So the state was archived for the 0.1 credential exchange protocol, which is what we used after the Connectathon in February. So both of these agents support that one. Aries framework until this week, I think that's the only credential exchange that it supports. I think Tomislav is working on upgrading to the 36 and 37 this week. So we created an RFC so that for the sole purpose of adding a link in Aries stable so that we could reference it and people would know what to build to. There was some interesting conversations today, and that could be part of the conversation now that I've finished. On how to get ACK into this so we could reference a link to a actually supported version of ACK, and as well I can't remember which one it was, but I think it's 160, the connections protocol does not align with DIDCOM. So my proposal is to put something in that is able to be referenced in Aries stable, even if we mark it as archived or something like that, so people don't build to it in the future unless they're trying to build something that will work with other agents that people are building independently. Now, obviously, if you're building something that is not for current use, that's okay. You don't really have to adhere to this. Or if you're building a POC that is only involving your agents for the time period, for this time, you're okay with that. But if you just decide you do want to, be able to use the Street Cred app that is available in the App Store and tell your users to do that, you'll now know which RFCs you need to support and which versions of those RFCs. That's the whole goal of this. So these are proposed topics for discussion. Now I'm totally open to questions, and jump in and let me know.
So this is Ken. I was wondering how you determine that if you have a new one proposed, does it automatically deprecate the previous one with the same major version? Or do you end up with a 1.0.1 and a 1.1 that are active at the same time? How do you deprecate the old one? Is the process as part of the proposing of the new one?
Yeah, I think it's you would have one major version and that's it that would be current, and you would automatically deprecate another. So I would see multiple major versions active at the same time, but not multiple minor ones active at the same time. Having said that, in the builder section that says, here's what I support, they can specify exactly which ones they support, and you can always follow a link to find which one that is and see what's in that one. So just because the current one is 1.04 doesn't necessarily mean everyone's automatically jumping up their version to support it. We just can't get that, that timeliness just can't happen. Does that make sense?
Steven, this is Daryl. One of the examples that's out in the wild has nothing to do with this space, but if you look at the mapping world, the OGC, the Open GIS or Open Geospatial Consortium, they went through a very similar process, and they've kind of normalized on various different services, but WMS, for example, web mapping service, there isn't a system on the planet that doesn't do 1.3.0. The ones before that, there was a lot of churn, but the community normalized on 1.3.0. It became a de facto standard version that everybody did, if that kind of helps. Yeah.
And my guess is we'll iterate a bit. We'll get to one in the 1.x world, and then we'll focus on, okay, let's get to a 2.0, and people will decide whether they want to support both 1.x and the 2.x or just one of them.
Yeah, my main point was to say that we're not going to try to have a 1.something and another 1.something both as stable versions. We're attempting to have a one version of a single major version number, and if we're going to have a second major, it would be a major version number where it would provide a second stable version, and if you wanted a third one, it would be a third major version.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, except that precludes the fact that you're going to have different communities deciding which of the 1.x ones to target. And I suspect that we will mostly converge on one, but you might have stuff that ends up being sort of in previous ones and they just haven't yet moved because of production schedules or whatever else. So when someone achieves a level, they can be at that level. And then when they achieve the next level, they'll move. And by level, I mean next, you know, 1.x. you know, X version of the thing. And so we're not going to march in lockstep, and there's going to be a newest one in the 1.x stream, right? Except that not everyone's going to be able to move immediately in lockstep. When you declare the thing as the next target, it's going to be a while before we actually get there. How long a while is depends on how urgently the community wants to move there and how big of a change is required.
Yeah. I think we're all saying the same thing. I think we're agreeing that there will only ever be one 1.x current version. There'll never be two of those. But you're absolutely right. How each builder goes about which version they support, that's got to be up to their own production schedules. We can't control that. At least we as a community have communicated out, here's what we think the current should be. Here's what we agree the current should be. And here's a list of implementations, and here's what version they are on.
So here's a practical application of that, right? Let's say 1.1 is declared, you know, we all agree on the targets for 1.1. Someone starts working on it. And then before they're done, 1.2 is declared. They might decide to abandon and then target 1.2. They might decide to just finish implementing 1.1, mm-hmm. even though it isn't the current one, if you will. And then it may be a while before they decide to devote the resources to move to the next major version. And that's likely to happen via interoperability needs, either for proof of concept, demonstrations or other types of interoperability events that drive, the target towards some specific thing.
To what degree do we want to use the test suite to identify normative compliance? By that, what I mean is similar to how W3C is testing to make sure that implementations support extensions and other things like that. To what degree do we want to make sure that this is how I can make sure that my implementation meets 1.0 specification?
By iterating and learning and applying. I mean, basically we build the test suite, we run it, somebody goes out in the wild and discovers, oh man, we didn't really test this as part of the test suite. So they add a test to it, and we agree that should be part of the test case. I mean, I think that's the only way you can do it. You can try to come up with ahead of time, and obviously we will, but then you iterate on the interesting use cases that may or may not have been covered.
Yeah, and that's Daryl again. I think that's a pretty solid approach, because as this gets more and more formal, the players that need the test suite to define interoperability, meaning typically this would be, you know, corporate and government, they'll specify a test suite that is robust enough to set the standard, like to vet and prove. Is that test going to be absolutely perfect? No, not initially. But at some point, yeah, it will be substantially complete.
So that makes sense. In terms of like improving the test suite, does that mean that we should be testing against the test suite to determine our interoperability level? Like if I fail three tests, I shouldn't call my release 1.0?
I think that's up to, I mean, again, I think that's getting into how people behave. And I don't think we really need, I think it's self-attested. And, you know, as I put on back here, to some degree, it's self-attested, but in the future, you want to include a link to the test results and say, look, not only am I self-attesting that I support this version, but, oh, look at my test results.
It does seem like it would be helpful if version numbers of frameworks were somewhat similar to the version numbers of the specs they supported, because it would make things easier to track. But I realize that that won't always be possible.
I was just going to say, Nathan, I mean, the problem is Aries Framework Go, for example, is not targeting the indie version. It'd be kind of weird to start with like a V2 in that framework. So
I must say I'm kind of cranky about us not starting at 1.0, since I've been on here for 2.5 years and I want something to have a 1 on it.
Oh, yeah.
So the fact that Aries Go is going to be 2, I think is a good thing.
Okay, we can. I wasn't saying what you guys should like put on here for your version number. I was just saying it's a little weird to jump to a V2. Like from a semantic versioning point of view.
I think Troy is just referring back to what Nathan was talking about having things align. And I think that would be...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I
don't want to call Aries Stable anything other than 1.0 as to what we start with.
I love the idea, though, that we can have a 2.0 that can also be a functional target for people that are targeting at that level.
Exactly.
And I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Can I revive my question from earlier?
Yes.
So let's say we as a community pick what 1.0.0 is, or whatever particular version, and in the implementation of such, let's say we run into an issue that neither of us have anticipated and wasn't addressed by the RFCs we're pointing at. The question is, what to do then?
So basically what the conversation is we're having this morning, because that actually is a pretty good example of that.
The one that I'm specifically thinking of is that we were trying to link up a street cred instance with an Akapai instance, and they disagree on what 8601 means, right? So whenever the decision is made, do we go back and amend that version, or do we include some other sort of notes? Like where does that refining decision get made? We're not trying to really move the target. We're just trying to refine the target.
My suggestion, but I think it could be for now, I would say leave it case by case, but something like that where it's undefined what the behavior should be, we should then add it, agree on what it should be, and then decide whether that needs to be a version change or not.
So at the very least, it could be a note in the stable RFC thing. There could be notes, and it can just highlight those
That's
issues
a good idea.
Inside there. And that way, we don't have to go push it back into the RFCs directly, but the implementation notes, the decision, the refining decision will still be present.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm satisfied with that answer.
Yeah, I think we have to try it and learn, basically, is the weasel answer I'm giving you. I'm not quite sure, and it'll depend on the details.
But I'm happy with that weasel answer. I think that's the appropriate answer for our stage as a community.
Yeah.
Oh, you know how many times I've heard people like my weasel being a weasel? Go ahead, Sarah.
I'm not commenting on liking your weasel.
No, 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 no.
I don't normally get sidelined, Steven.
Can we remove that from the recording?
Yes, Sam, I like your term, stage of the community. But at some point, we need to get to the point where that kind of squishiness is gone. You know, we're not there yet. And I think putting any rigid lines in would be just counterproductive at this moment. But at some point, the community needs to get to the point where we say, okay, cool, no, we're not doing that anymore. If an RFC is flawed, it gets shot, and we come back and we start to slow down the iterative path. Otherwise, the community is going to have a lot of trouble following it. But for now, we need to have that flexibility, the weasel stuff.
I totally agree.
Yeah. A comment from Kyle about versions of Test Suite. I thought a lot about that as I wrote this. The problem is that a Test Suite, it's kind of like the RFCs. It's not, you can't just sort of go for all of them. That's why I deliberately use the words, here's the list of test cases that apply, because there's going to be a suite would have a variation. So again, I'm not quite sure how exactly this is going to work because we don't have a test suite yet, but the entire test suite would not align to an ARI stable, but rather a set of test cases would test ARI stable. And slightly different.
But would we want to allow, without increasing the version of stable or whatever we end up calling that, would we want to allow the test suite to progress without changing that version?
I think the test suite, at least initially in our early stage, is a refinement of that. So for example, under the data issue just talked about, we discover that there's a discrepancy, we add some tests, and then we amend the version number to include new tests that dictate that particular version.
Okay, so if my product had passed the earlier version of that test suite, and then I have that recorded somewhere, and now we amend the test suite, I think that's why it's important to include the version of the test suite that my product passed.
The test suite results will have the version of the test suite in it.
Okay. Right.
So that'll help there. The other thing that I want to say about the test suite is that we have, is that it's entirely possible to tell the test suite which target you're attempting, and then it can include the necessary test cases that match. And so that is something that we can add to the test suite we've got. So that it will automatically pick the cases and try to run those and avoid running ones you're not trying to test to.
Right. So that could be a way to do it.
I think what we're after here is that there is some sort of versioning capability in Test Suite, and Test Suite is the normative thing, is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that we're on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Part of that discussion, I mean, I've been raising at least, historically, the geospatial realm did exactly the same. We had a lot of churn, crazy madness, vendors pointing fingers at each other. And at one point, the test suite got to the level where it was the de facto, if you didn't pass the test, you were done. You couldn't claim interop. And that caused the whole market to change focus, which was fantastic.
But we I think we'll get there. We just have to.
Yep.
Yep.
We can't expect it to be immaculately conceived, though. It's just going to be ugly at times.
So I'm good with not declaring it right away. I just want that to be a state of goal that we're heading towards. And once we're past that point, we don't reduce the barrier of entry again.
Right. And the RFC states that.
The other thing I would say here is this is one of the goals of having a Connectathon that's in person, is that we can have some of this discussion about what's coming up and how quickly we can assimilate these different RFCs moving to major versions, and how we're going to manage kind of the project support of getting these things done, because we can do some of the horse trading of what we want to have happen sooner and what we want to have happen later, so that we can kind of keep compatibility across the different implementations.
So this is Troy. I put one question into the chat. I don't know that it got caught, but you know, I'm still maybe a little concerned about the semantics of the word stable, in that I kind of feel that refers to maybe the code bases. And I guess my suggestion would be to call this like an interop profile or something like that. So that's one suggestion I wouldn't mind tabling. And I think the other one to what Nathan just mentioned, we have, I'll say it again, but I mean, the Go framework is clearly targeting the new protocols like BitExchange and not the Indy protocol. So we're not going to be across the board compatible. We're going to end up with two streams. And maybe it's a good idea to maybe define this Aries two stream in a second RFC, and we start with BitExchange or something like this. But so those are the two points I have.
So I would be against having it in a separate stream. Like, I think the mechanism we're proposing here allows you to do that. And I would encourage that we stick with the same model. And when we deprecate 1.0 and it goes away, it just doesn't be, it doesn't get added as current. And the only current one is 2.0. That's definitely my preference. I don't like the idea of having a separate RFC that does it, but I guess it's fine. I guess that could work.
Steve, are you suggesting we put both streams into the same RFC? So it's like 1.0 yeah. and 2.0 in the same RFC document?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was proposing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you think about the like the stable term? I wasn't sure how attached you were to that, but I'm just still trying to like sort out the semantics in my head about calling you know this thing stable versus code bases versus you know just saying what it is, which is an interop profile, I guess. But
it's an interesting one. I hadn't thought of it before. It doesn't roll off, but it's not. I'm not against it either.
I think you can call it profile for
profile
sure.
Profile is not bad.
No, it's not bad, and it stable yeah. does tend to make you think of code, where an interop profile makes it feel more like a collection of targets, which is it is. So maybe it's Aries profile version 1.0.0 or
no, I prefer interop profile if we're going to go to that.
Well, it would be an Aries interop profile in full form.
Stable does sort of speak to the stable branch idea. You know, you've got master and you've got stable, and
it does it, so but it makes it feel like it's code instead of.
It also makes it feel like it's never going to change.
Yeah, I prefer the interop profile, and if we find that there's some version that everybody just tends to lock on, maybe stable comes in one day, like the 1.3 that Daryl suggested. But for now, it seems very much like we're at interop profile stage, and so, can table that discussion.
I don't think it's a stage. I think it's a concept we want to have, which is okay. Here's the but.
Okay, so point of order.
Like, we wouldn't rename it for that.
So point of order. We've had really good discussion, and I like this, and particularly the suggestions that have been brought up. But I do want to make sure we have time to allow Mike to present. We've squeezed into his time a little bit because this has been really good conversation. And I very much appreciate it. So let's take this to the Aries channel on Rocket Chat and to issues on the RFC repo. And we can continue refining some of these concepts, but it seems like we made a lot of good progress. Any parting words, Stephen, before we switch?
Nope. I think I'll go with interop profile as suggested, and I'll do another PR that updates to that. I think most of the other things are covered in what I've done. So, or what we've done, cause it wasn't just me. So I think we're pretty close. The other side is leading up to the, I'd like this to be a topic to nail down what is 1.0.0 and at the Connectathon. And so I'll be looking at trying to get a few more of these things into accepted state. Some of them I don't think they're controversial, and then I'm trying to work through the others that have nuances to them. So that's what I'll work on.
Thank you, Stephen. All right, Mike, the floor is yours.
All righty. I don't have anything fancy to show. This is mostly just a topic to bring up. So URSA is done with all the coding for some new anonymous credentials for what we call 2.0. If you're interested in what that looks like, I can give you a slide deck. But the main thing is those APIs on the URSA side are done. And so I'm kind of bringing out an open discussion for what is needed to create verifiable credentials framework in Aries. So the first thing we need is Aries doesn't have anywhere defined like a crypto interface. And so would they like that as an RFC? And then we need like, there's a credentials interface, and then there's like the credentials exchange interface. I haven't browsed all through the RFCs to talk about this or to know enough about it. But anyway, that's what I'm thinking is the crypto interface is going to need encryption, signing, and then anything related to verifiable credentials. And then the credentials exchange is going to have credential issuance, proof generation, and proof verification. And obviously not everybody's going to want to use URSA for that, but if they do, then that's one available backend. But the point is, we need to start coming up with an interface for what that looks like on the front end so that we can have swappable backends. And so I kind of like to open it up for what do people envision doing with credentials? Are they going to want to support non-ZKPs? Are they going to want to, you know, are we just going to do indie right out of the gate? So that's partially why I was hoping to allocate a lot of time for this because I expected it to be a hot debated item, but maybe it won't be. So.
Doesn't sound like it. I think we want to support everything. I think that was the point of Aries is that we don't pick that we can either dynamically or a builder can create whichever ones that they want to support and plug it in and it'll work.
So let me give you an example about what this looks like. So let me see if I can find it. Yeah, here we go. I'll just share my screen here in a minute as soon as I can get it up. Yeah. Okay. So the main thing that we need is when we're talking about like anonymous credentials, there's also verifiable credentials, but Indy's mostly interested in the anonymous credential stuff. And so when Indy uses anonymous credentials, there's like the ledger stuff, like the identifiers for who can issue credentials, what those credentials look like, the keys for the issuers and any revocation details that are associated with that. And then, you know, there's the credentials themselves, like the signature types that are associated with those, how the attributes are encoded back and forth from, you know, a string to whatever is actually encrypted and signed, and then the presentation of all that stuff. So in anonymous credentials one, we have the two options. And so we need to probably support that. But then the old one was RSA based. And the reason why we chose that over, you know, the simple signatures was because the old systems could only do one message. And when you create a proof, it requires the private key, right, to create a signature. And you have to reveal the signature and the attribute or whatever it was signed every single time, and every message is the same, right? Every presentation is the same. But when we chose to do CL signatures, right, we can sign any number of messages. We can generate proofs with a public key. And the proof doesn't reveal anything except what the holder wants, right? And then each presentation looks different and unique. So the old one was, you could say it was slow for key generation, but it was pretty moderate for everything else. And when you compare it against RSA, it wasn't that bad. And then when you look at proof size, you know, they weren't that bad. It was just a couple bytes or a couple kilobytes, depending on what you wanted to do versus RSA. It was actually about, you know, pretty similar in size. And then we used this old system of like a tails file with an accumulator and a revocation registry. So this got pretty gnarly for those that ever played with it, right? You could get, if you want 10 million credentials, you get almost a 1.28 gigabyte file, and that had to be downloaded And then you'd have to update and do things to generate the proof, which was nasty. But once you got that out of the way, the proof generation was actually pretty good. So, and the proof sizes weren't that big, just, you know, one to two kilobytes, depending on what you needed to do. But the limitation with those was you couldn't do any set memberships, either static or dynamically. You couldn't do, like, it wasn't equal. There was no self-attested attributes, right? Like, I want to attach a public key in here. I want some terms and conditions on my data that I just shared with you. Or I want to say, yes, I consent to whatever this transaction was. And, you know, if you ever wanted to do M of N issuance or you wanted to do delegation, it just didn't do it. The first one. When we talk about, my daughter's right here. So when we talk about non-creds too, we've talked about simplifying it from our kind of old system from two credentials to one, and we're using some new signature types. But under the API, I would hope that we can design it to be agnostic so that you're using one or two or even regular verifiable credentials and it shouldn't matter. And so with the non-creds too, we added delegatable credentials, self-attested attributes. We revised the revocation registry to use Merkle proofs instead of tails files and accumulators. And we got rid of extra keys required for that. You can just use your simple 825519 keys. And revocation just becomes a set membership predicate. And then we added, like, you could do static and dynamic, inequalities. And the cool thing is we also allow it to use three different signatures. So depending on your use case, you might pick one of these three. BBS Plus is the equivalent of CL6 2.0. And then Ponchoval Sanders is very similar, but it allows threshold, but it tends to be slightly slower, but definitely bigger. And then there's this Groth signature for delegation. But the cool thing is, since they're all based on the same curve, we can mix and match them such that you have a credential that's BBS Plus, you have a credential that's Ponchoval Sanders, and you have a credential that's a Groth. So you can use all three, which is really cool. These are some numbers and how it compared to the old system. You can see it's, as far as when you do key generation, it's incredibly faster, much faster, but everything else is about 2 to 10 times faster. And then in size-wise, it's about half. And then if we go to Ponchoval Sanders, am I getting comments here? Yes, BLS 12381. So the threshold issuance, this is like, I don't trust one issuer, but there's a group of them. And so I can ask all of them to give me a credential to which, you know, about maybe half respond, and then I can complete my signature with a whole bunch of partials. Let's see, there we go. And here's some numbers of how it compares to BBS Plus. It looks like it's a little slower, but when you actually plot it as the number of attributes grows, they're about the same in terms of key generation. The only one that's interesting is when you go to sign, the Ponchoval Sanders scales better in that it's pretty constant. And regardless of the amount of attributes, it takes the same amount of time to sign. But in terms of the others, it doesn't matter. They're about the same. Ponchoval Sanders looks like it's a little slower for proof generation. They're about the same for verification. In terms of their sizes, this is how they both compare to the old system. So you can see they typically are about half to a third of the size. But otherwise, they're pretty related. And then with delegation, I don't know if regular verifiable credentials supports this, but the anonymous credentials does, where I have a credential that comes from a root issuer, A, and A says, all right, B, you can issue credentials just as if you were me in a way. So think of it as you have your local government and then you have individual offices. And so the local government has delegated authority to these individual offices to issue credentials. So, but then when they go to present it, it looks like it was signed by the local government and not the individual offices. And the downside is it is slower and bigger than those other two signatures that I was showing you. And if you need privacy among issuers, there isn't any, because they all know all the other, like C would know all the attributes that were given to B and that A gave to B. So, but there's also two different ways that this could work. One is what I call the cut, where A revokes B, but then as a result of that, C is also revoked. But then there's the independent route where A revokes B, but C still continues to work because at the time C got the credential, B was in good standing, but B is no longer in good standing, and I want C to be able to operate independent of B. So those are the two different ways it could work, but all of this should be considered when we're designing these APIs. So I just want people to be aware of it. And you might be wondering when I show you this, why there are two signatures. It's based on the cryptography and how it works. It's if you are even number in the chain of delegation, you get the Groth 2, and if you're odd, you get Groth 1. So behind the interface, you wouldn't see this, but just fundamentally, you would know that, oh, there's two underneath. If I'm odd or even, maybe this is why it's slightly slower on one case, but faster on the others. Other than that, the system would handle it underneath, and you wouldn't have to worry about it. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, size-wise, they're about the same, roughly. You know, one grows bigger with the number of attributes, but has smaller proofs, and the other one has bigger proofs, but is smaller as the credential grows. So I recommend that you only use delegatable credentials as needed for the limited use cases, because the proofs are slower. And then as the chain gets longer, it might become just prohibitive to even use it in the first place. But it's a cool idea. So I'm not discounting its value, just I don't want people to go berserk using delegatable credentials. So the other part of AnonCreds 2 is the added predicates that we've added and are available. So if you don't want any prior setups, we take advantage of bulletproofs. But if you would like to do setups, we allow SNARKs as well, or SNARKs are coming, bulletproofs are implemented. And the cool thing is we're using an optimized hash algorithm for these that allows us to run 7 to 14 times faster over the Zcash versions or any others that just use kind of Pedersen commitments. So it's quite nice. And then there's also a new one called verifiable encryption, where if I encrypt data, I can do proof about the encrypted data's contents without revealing it, mostly for, you know, auditing and accountability purposes, but it's an extra feature. And then we want to put these in Indian Aries. And so that's part of the reason I have this slide. So I hope that helps kind of clear that up a little bit, but anyway, those are the interfaces that we're hoping to design to. And so does anybody have any questions about how this might work or how this might look? Is RFCs the best place to start for this? I feel like the RFC process kind of moves slow, and so I'd like to start doing code, but I don't know. I don't see any code written yet, yeah, at least not in the Rust part.
So, two questions. Does Aries depend on URSA for non-ZKP credentials? So I think in the beginning it was mentioned that Aries wants to do verifiable credentials, non-ZKP ones also. So would it depend on URSA? And the second question is, what kind of proof generation expectations Aries have from URSA? So what, like, how complex proofs are you looking for? Like, are you looking for proofs as simple as, yeah, prove that you have a credential or two or three credentials and the links will be the same and reveal a two or three attributes, who are looking for very a little more complex composition, like proof that you have these attributes or this condition is true or that condition is true or your grade age is greater than 18 or things like that. So what are the complexity expectations?
I would say around 2 to 3 seconds on a mobile device. You might be able to stretch it a little bit, but I I think that's when it starts to get to the point of unbearable, because you're also doing other things other than just the cryptography. In terms of your second question, I can't remember your first.
The first one was, actually it's the answer to my question in chat. So my two questions were, does Aries depend on URSA for non-ZKP credentials, right? Is there a, or Aries wants to take care of a non-ZKP stuff like the EVS signature or whatever you have on its own? And the second question was, the kind of proofs that Aries expects to generate using URSA. So.
Oh, okay. In terms of the first question, this is just my opinion on this. I think it would make sense to keep all of the cryptography within the same library rather than having to go to many different libraries. This is to make sure that auditing is getting done properly and we can have very clear paths in terms of communication. For example, when a timing attack was discovered recently, if you're working with multiple libraries, you ran into problems around update times. So I think it makes sense to try and consolidate all of the cryptography into URSA. For the second one, I would actually kind of defer this back to you guys in terms of deciding and making recommendations about when we should be using certain credential schemes. I think that's where we may lack in terms of expertise of when we should be using what and for like what use cases. I kind of get an idea based upon like what you're explaining, but I'm not even certain of it. So I'd like to, follow up with that and try and put out something to make recommendations of like, if you're not planning to use any ZKPs, use, this credential type or that credential type, or if you're planning to do delegatable credentials with 100, use this scheme over here rather than that scheme or something like that. That's just my opinion though.
Okay. So I agree the first answer to the first question. I believe that it should be one library that you should be doing crypto. The second, I was not asking for technical details of the construction to use, but what are the use cases? What kind of proofs people are interested in? We've seen some simple proofs where you prove that you have a credential and then maybe you disclose, do certain disclosure where you reveal some attributes. Or maybe you do a simple predicate, my age is greater than 18. So these are some examples, but what are the other examples, right? So that this will give us an idea of what, how we should express, how we should design the something called Zmix. So Zmix is the layer where you express what kind of proof you want to create. The primitives, the constructions you want to use is a separate implementation detail and that can be picked, but we would like to know the use cases that we want to support so we can design the proof generation interface. So think of it like if I told you you have to design SQL. Okay, now your questions would be, okay, what kind of queries do you want to do, end users want to make on the database? That's how I'll design the query language to support the operators and allow grouping or not, allow ordering or not, or those kind of. So my questions were on that level.
Okay. I don't necessarily have an answer. May other people on the call may, though.
Okay. I mean, is there a document where somebody has documented some kind of proof request that they want to, want to create? If there's not, then let's create one.
Just to kind of repeat this, to make sure, I don't think there is a document. I do think there's plenty of use cases that have been floating around the community in terms of different ways to use ZKPs. I think you guys highlighted quite a few of them. But I'm also getting the sense that a lot of this may have been misunderstood in terms of here's the capability. How do I actually turn that into a use case? I think I still have some connecting of the dots to do in terms of how to make that work. And so I may not be able to give you an answer right now.
Well, my question is to this group, who is most interested in working on this? Because if the group is only interested in working on the anonymous credentials and doesn't want to do the other stuff, fine, great. That makes it my job easy. So, but I doubt that's going to be the case unless someone can speak up to say, I don't want anonymous credentials. I would just want to do the regular verifiable credentials with simple signatures.
So my thought on that, and maybe that's a different interpretation from how you asked it first, but my hope would be IRSA would focus on DKPs and anonymous creds, and ARIES would enable us to use that work for DKPs and then other work for other types of credentials, but that IRSA would not support all of those or not need to support all of those. That
right.
is kind of how my thought goes. Is that what you're asking?
So my question is mostly for the, you know, I want to, after I finish some of my other stuff, I'd like to help design the ARIES layer that consumes IRSA for the ZKP stuff. But when designing the APIs, we need to keep in mind that, you know, under the hood, ZKPs is one implementation, non-ZKPs
right.
is another implementation. ARIES can just right. abstract that away. And so my question is, who's most interested in looking at the non-ZKP route? Because as far as sovereign's concerned, ZKP route's the one we care about.
SecureKey is interested in non-ZKP route.
And I'd also like to find out why. We don't have to discuss the why on this call if you
right,
want.
Because, well, first off, as far as I'm aware, none of these schemes are FIPS compliant. Or am I mistaken on that? So that's one major hurdle.
So when you say FIPS compliant, it's just because they haven't been run through the ringer of the FIPS verification process. Is that right? That's my understanding.
Yes. Effectively, yes.
Because so FIPS is funny because the algorithms underneath that implements this, those are FIPS compliant, but the actual, let me give you an example. So all of the BLS 12381 curve operations, you could say, are FIPS compliant. The RSA stuff is FIPS compliant. All the elliptic curve stuff is FIPS compliant. Now, when we apply those to do ZKPs, that part's not FIPS compliant. So.
Right, and that's where that's a hurdle we just ran into.
Okay.
My take on this is that we want to support both ZKPs and non-ZKPs from interoperability standpoint to be able to offer both to customers. But at the same time, I think IRSA in the ZMIX side of things only needs to focus on the ZKP side. But it would also be nice to have, you know, the ED25519 sign, which I know you guys already have. And then the non-ZKP stuff can be built at a higher layer. It doesn't have to be built into ZMIX. That's my opinion of it.
Right. I'm not, from an IRSA perspective, I'm not planning to support any non-ZKP stuff. So, but when we go into the ARIES layer where you implement protocols and messaging around ZKPs for presentations, I'm hoping the API can be designed such that the caller just says, I want ZKPs or I don't. But the API is about the same.
Yep, that aligns with my thinking.
Okay.
Yep.
So Troy, are you the one that I should contact for now about doing the non-ZKP route?
This is George speaking. Troy had to drop off, but yes, you should contact him.
Is there anybody else from that side that we need to talk about? Or is SecureKey the only ones?
I mean, as Kyle said, we're interested in non-ZKPs for certain use cases as well.
Okay.
I'll follow up with you later, Mike, though. I have a few questions to follow up with you on. So.
Hi, it's Paul here. This to me, this kind of mirrors what we're doing in the indie semantics work group, it kind of makes sense to me to put together an ARI semantics group to deal with all the non-zero knowledge proof credential definitions and schema definitions and stuff. I don't know if you guys are up for that, but I think that might be worthwhile.
Well, and the other question I have is, URSA is all written in Rust. And so those of you that are designing libraries around like C# or Go or Java, as long as we're exposing it through an FFI, is that acceptable? Or I know like Go people tend to shy away from that because then they have to change compilers. So I don't know what people are gonna want here. So that's another consideration to bring up. Or are they okay wrapping the Rust code?
So, so what are you actually saying? I mean, are you guys going to implement in Rust anyway?
Well, that's when I implement the framework for Indy's purposes, we're just doing Rust. But URSA exposes many of these things over FFI, the C boundaries. So is that good enough? I'm mostly just curious.
So the thinking goes as of yet that ZKPs is optionally supported, and if we do, then yes, it'll be of great value to just import the C callable library, basically.
Okay, good. I'm not saying I would re-implement it anyway. I'm just mostly curious.
So Mike, is WASM a target for URSA?
Yes.
So if URSA builds it, then any WASM capable system should be able to pull it in anyway.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, URSA as of right now already builds for WASM. So either my presentation was clear as crystal, or it was so confusing that no one knows what kind of questions to ask.
Can I ask a question that I've been wondering about for a while? Since nobody else has one. Yay. You mentioned the revocation is Merkle. And my understanding of that is that the only thing that goes on the ledger is just the Merkle root of the revocation tree. Is that correct? And if so, where does the rest of the content go?
We're still trying to decide that, but for now, I believe we were just planning to put the leaves on the ledger because each leaf is, each credential is represented by one bit, a 0 for non-revoked, 1 for revoked. And so if you put 10 million credentials, that's only 10 million bits. Plus the Merkle root. So the question is whether the ledger can handle that, writing that much data, because then you're only individual leaves at a time as you do things. And then as part of your proof, you'd have to compute your path in hashes, which isn't terrible, right?
Yeah.
So.
Mike, did you say that each leaf would be written individually, or leaves gathered up into a structure before they're written out as changes are made?
Just a bit array, or a big old blob byte array. So,
actually, the details are different than that. You don't just have the leaves; you have the whole tree. So, unless you are trying to optimize, trying to host data structure somewhere else, just put the root on the ledger. Unless you take that route, then yes, you have all the leaves, all the inner nodes, the whole tree is on the ledger. The ledger hosts the tree. And each leaf essentially depends 0 or 1 depending on other credentials revoked or not. But yeah, they won't be stored as a bit array on disk. It's only when you're trying to, let's say, retrieve the whole tree. Let's say you don't trust the node to not track what leaf you're querying for, right? Because if you query for a certain leaf, then the node serving you knows that that leaf corresponds to you. So approach to preserve it privacy, we will download all the leaves of the tree and build a tree on your own and then create the proof. So an efficient way to get the whole tree is you just get all the bits, get a bit corresponding to each leaf. So you're not downloading, like, let's say 1 million bytes, but 1 million bits.
I would say if the ledger does run in implementations, this would be a good use case for potentially side tree.
I don't remember exactly side trees, but I kind of get the concept, right? So it's something that the data structure is rooted at the ledger, but the data structure lives off the ledger, something like that.
Yeah, it's essentially just storing the data in IPFS and then anchoring it.
Okay.
Very similarly.
Yeah. So if you're doing that, yes, you can host the Merkle tree. But it's not just hosting the Merkle, like hosting a blob of data. You have to update the tree as well. And then the issuer can do that, right? The issuer can update the Merkle tree and supply the delta to whoever's hosting the tree and then update the Merkle tree on the ledger. So that construction is possible. It's just, it involves other work. And the simplest approach would be just to put everything on the ledger and maybe in future iterations you optimize that.
We say everything on the ledger, I mean, like, initially when nothing's revoked, the entire tree looks identical, right?
Yep.
So.
Yeah, that makes sense. I know they've been talking about in diff a common revocation scheme, and I think, you know, this is something that's a good front runner for that. And so they may be willing to work on the side tree aspect of it in order to make it a commonality between everybody. But I think that's a conversation for a later date that we can table.
We're out of time on this call, so.
Yeah. In any case, I think it's worth at least trying against the ledger first and seeing where the limits are.
So that's a long answer to your short question, Stephen.
Much appreciated.
And that brings us to time. Thank you, folks, for coming. Good conversation, and I feel like we made some good progress, gained some understanding. We will see you all in the RFC issues and in the Aries channels. Grateful for your taking the time to be here, and we will talk more later. Thanks, folks.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good week.